Hey guys, join in on the conversation. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you think and what you want to hear us talk about. Warning, in an attempt to identify and discuss our issues openly, we at the Other Side of Hell podcast may discuss drug and alcohol abuse in detail. Anyone suffering with addiction could find this triggering.
Please note, we are not counselors, therapists, or medical professionals. We do not speak on behalf of any 12-step groups or treatment facilities. We are just three guys who have been through hell and have come out the other side.
Our hope is to share our experience with others who may have found themselves in similar situations so that you know you are not alone, there is hope, and there are people who understand how you feel. Enjoy.
What's up, everybody? I'm Nate.
I'm Cameron.
I'm Willie.
And again, we have our special guest.
Hey, guys, it's Jordan.
Welcome to the Other Side of Hell podcast.
All right, guys, what's up?
How are we doing
today? What's up?
Again.
Week 25. What up? Social distancing from you.
I miss the studio,
fruit
man.
Cakes. From you, fruitcake.
I miss
cakes.
It. Yeah.
I miss your musk, Willie. You're such a big, solid man.
I miss you.
I miss your musk. Nate, I miss your awkward hugs.
Well, this is all over. We should move in together.
Jordan, I really miss those awkward hugs from you, too.
Yeah. They're awkward.
We're gonna get them hugs, guys. I feel like
we will.
We're on our way.
Yeah. Well, you know, looks like we're kind of on the downward end of this quarantine, and we should be rolling into our normal way of doing things here pretty soon. I'm excited for that. I'm excited to get back to the studio. It'd be nice. You guys are doing okay? I mean,
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm doing great. I love what has happened over the last couple of weeks as far as myself goes. It was just what I needed.
Yeah. You learn a lot about yourself.
You do. Yeah. Care to share anything? Any words of wisdom with everybody? Willie?
It's funny. I was talking to Cameron, I think this morning, because I was going over some older podcasts. And one when you were in jail, we did an update. We used to do updates instead of updates. Updates on Nate while he was in the clink.
Clink,
And we were talking about and you know, I said, you know, Nate's using his time well. He's been reading a lot of books. And Cameron says, quote, "I can only imagine what I would do with that kind of time." And here it is, you know, like I'm really grateful for the amount of time I've had. I've grown closer to my family. I've grown closer to myself. I was able to look some issues in the face and come out of this whole thing, I think, better than when I came into it. So
that's great. That's good.
I feel like the slowdown. I'm not super hype on the reason that we had the slowdown, but I'm grateful that it happened for myself. You know, I wish it could have been a different way, but I'm going to accept it for what it is.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thanks, man, for sharing. I feel that. Like I've had some weird growth things as well, just like career wise and the things I've been able to do with the podcast and sort of expand my skills and ability, like in ways that, you know, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to do otherwise. And so we've been able to connect with a lot of people that we would not have had the opportunity to connect with had this whole thing not gone down. So it's pretty easy to put a spin of gratitude on it for me.
Your photo editing for our Instagram is on point, though. Like, I love what
it looks good.
you know, for anyone who doesn't really know, Cameron does all of the visual editing for visual editing of our promotions for Instagram and Facebook. So anything that you see on those that say episode out tomorrow or coming soon, new episode, or any of those kind of things. Cameron also designed our logo, the way that it's written, the way that it's on our pages, you know, everything that we promote, Cameron designed all that stuff his house. And I think he's gotten better at it because of all this. And so, you know, I think he's coming out on the other side of this a better person than what he was too. So thanks for all that, Cameron.
For sure, man.
Yes. Thank you, Cameron.
Thank you guys. Yeah. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah.
Do you
more or less, Willie?
Well, I too am coming out of this a much better person. I feel I too have gotten to know myself a lot better. I kind of uncovered some hidden talents. I met some really cool people that I not normally would have met had this not happened, and I have to say I'm very grateful that, you know, for the time that I had and for the things that kind of transpired during the quarantine. Had a lot of good experiences throughout this thing. I had some struggles, like, I won't lie, you know, there was a couple of weeks I kind of struggled to get through, but I powered through them. And Jordan, how are you doing? How are you coming out of this?
You know, I obviously, I've stated since we've been doing these Zoom meetings and since I've actually been kind of a part of the podcast, more so than just being behind the scenes, actually getting a chance to talk and connect with some of our viewers. You know, I stated early on that not a lot changed because I was still going to work and different things. The last 2 weeks I've been working from home, and so it's different. I'm learning how to do a lot of like computer related stuff that I didn't really ever mess with or do before. So that's kind of a new skill. Yeah, you know, I feel I'm coming out on top. I've found a lot more time to devote towards my relationship. I mean, last night, me and Ellie, we sat and played a bunch of board games, you know, just hung out. We've been doing that a lot more frequently, where normally I'm out running and gunning, doing a bunch of different work. You know, I'm hardly ever home. So I feel that I'm kind of coming out on top because I'm starting to kind of value and learn that downtime is a necessary and important thing to have. So that's a big takeaway for me so far from this.
Well, that's interesting because you had said that you felt like you needed to learn how to do that. So
yeah, for sure.
Hello.
Yeah.
Great.
Happens to you. Or not to you, things happen for you, right?
Yep. It's not happening to you, it's happening for you. All right.
Love it.
Okay.
My kids are coming out better, too. Like, you know, I put those monkey rings in the backyard, and you guys know that Isaac goes to ninja school, and part of that is swinging on stuff, and he's going to go back when that opens up and be better at it than when he left. You know,
cool.
All right. Well, Jordan, I'm glad to hear that, and I'm glad to hear that we all are taking something good away from this experience and coming out of it better individuals and better men. Yeah. So, good for you guys. So I think with all that said, that kind of is a great segue into our topic today of resiliency. And today we're going to talk about resilience.
Good choice. Good topic, yeah. Nate.
So, let me just ask you guys, when you hear the word resilience, what do you think? Cameron?
I think of Rocky Balboa.
Oh.
Because Rocky Balboa is the king of resilience, right? And there's actually a quote that I remember, like, Rocky, I think for me, was like one of the most motivating movies, like when I was a kid. Just, I think it's timeless too, like it holds up, right? But the quote is like, life is not about how hard you get hit, it's about how you get up and move forward after getting hit, you know, or something along those lines. And I feel like that's resilience for me in a nutshell. It's like, man, like sometimes I'm going to get my ass kicked by something, you know, like sometimes things are not going to be what I want them to be. And in those moments, like, the lesson is not, you know, whether or not I can do that thing. It's whether or not I can get up and move past whatever that moment or situation was. So for me, resilience is sort of that in a nutshell. The actual quote is, and I'll try and do my best Sylvester Stallone Rocky impersonation.
Oh boy.
Life is not about how hard you can hit, but how much you can get hit and still keep moving forward.
Wow, you did good.
Really?
Yeah, well, pretty good. Yeah, I like it.
Thanks,
I like,
man.
It.
I feel like you're being kind, but I appreciate that.
Well, I like that you brought Rocky up. That movie is pretty resilient. There's what, like 50 of them?
Yeah, the movie, the franchise itself. Yeah.
But no, that's a great analogy. It really is. But you know, I really wanted to talk about this today because I think it's important that we just talk about it, but that everybody here, you know, gets a chance to hear what we talk about, because we're coming out of, like I said, hopefully we're coming out of the quarantine here soon, in the next week or two. And, you know, like, I think we didn't expect this. Like, this is something that nobody planned for. People have lost income, lost jobs. They're, you know, and now is the time for us to really dig in and be as resilient as we possibly, as we can be. And so, Willie, tell us something, man. Like, on resilience. I want to hear something resilience. From Willie.
Testify,
I
want to hear some,
testify, oh, brother.
That's Freak all it. We have, right? Like, I mean, when it all boils down to, you know, when I look at the fact that I have all these allergies to so many different chemicals, and what I mean by that is, like, the things I put in my body affect the way that I think and the way that I feel about myself, and I have to continually check my brain on how I'm treating myself based on my behavior, you know, and a lot of times I will end up in a dark place on accident, and I have to get out of that place as quickly as possible. Again, it goes back to that thing that we talk about all the time on here, that I have a brain designed or evolved, a brain that has evolved to keep me alive with a mind that wants to kill me. And I have to continually pick myself back up and remind myself who I am, what I'm trying to do, what the payoff for it is, you know. And like Rocky said, like the little bearded Rocky down there in my bottom right corner. I don't know where you're at on everybody else's screen, but Cameron's in my bottom right corner. You know, I have to get up and I got to keep moving no matter what hits me. And that's really the definition of resilience, right? Like coming back after some sort of difficulties or strenuous situation. And you know, luckily for us, most of that stuff lies within our own heads, at least in America, you know, especially where we're at here in Utah. The economy's always been good. Health has always been good. The air here is above, you know, much better than a lot of places. The water's clean. The grass is green. There's plenty of jobs, all those things. Like, there's a lot to be grateful. So most of the things that I have to come back are self-imposed difficulties, you know, but it's still the reality of it for me, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't get to choose the war that I'm in. I just have to fight it. So I think it's a great topic.
Yeah, it's a great point, Willie. Thank you for sharing that. Jordan, what do you think?
For me, resilience, so by nature, we are resilient. And what I mean by that is, if you were to break it down into a physical idea of resilience versus a mental scope of resilience. You know, if I get a cut, it's going to heal. If I get hit and I bruise, it's going to heal. So my body is naturally resilient, right? But when something happens at a mental level, well, then my brain can hold on to it, right? So by holding on to it, it makes it a little bit harder to bounce back from it. Versus if I get a cut, my brain's not thinking, oh my goodness, there's a cut. I'm just going to never forget about this cut and I'm going to bleed to death. Like, that's not something that happens at a physical level because I'm naturally resilient. But at a mental scope of it all, then yeah, you know, you can hold on to things and hinder yourself from moving forward from it. So to be resilient is to be able to let go, in my opinion. And that's kind of how I look at it.
I like that, Jordan. I like
the point that you made. A lot of times, you know, if we don't think about or focus on the injury, a lot of times it tends to heal, especially physically. But if we had to sit and consciously think about that cut healing, it would probably never heal.
You know, I really like that analogy, though, because, you know, like, I've had some physical injuries before, and, you know, those are really, for me, like, they've been really easy to deal with, you know, because I know, like, it's someday, like, it'll take a month or two to heal from this and I'll be back to normal thing, you know, like, but it's the emotional injuries that you have such a difficult time in kind of, and I don't want to say endure, I want to say tackling and getting through, you know, and that's for me where resilience comes into play. Like, you know, life is life. Like, things are going to happen in life that we do not expect. You know, there's loss of job, loss of life, you know, all these things that are really like, they're traumatizing, you know, and it's figuring out how are we going to tackle these situations and progress and not degress for me, you know. And, you know, one thing that helps me, and I watched this video this morning, it was a TED Talks, and this lady got up and she said, how many people have experienced a death, an unexpected death or a loss of a parent or a loss of a child? Please stand up. And most of the crowd stood up. And then she said, how many have had to endure a divorce or a bad breakup or, you know, and then, you know, before you knew it, she went through this whole list of traumatizing events that people endure. You know, it didn't take very long before the whole audience was standing up. You know, everyone is going to experience some kind of trauma throughout their life. And it's how we get through that that is important. And, you know, that's, you know, we really are, for some people, this quarantine has been a traumatizing experience. And, you know, I'm sure they're like small business owners. There's a lot of small business owners out right now that are thinking to themselves, how are we going to recover from this? You know, I know, you know, so, I mean, this is a really kind of a delicate time for our nation and for the world. You know, it's a great time to test our resilience and to persevere and to move forward in a positive direction. And so, you know, that's really why I wanted to talk about this today. And so
I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great point. It's actually when you were talking just then, like, it made me think of, you know, we talked about, like, if you have a cut, you know that that's going to heal. If you have a broken bone, like, you know that you're going to have to wear a cast for a minute and that it's going to suck, but you know that that's going to get better.
Exactly.
But when it comes to, like, our emotions and the physical trauma or emotional trauma or anything like that, like, we're so quick to think or assume that it's the end of the world, right? Or it, at least for me, you know, that's how I tend to think, right? Is that, like, it's never gonna get better. Like, I'm gonna be stuck in this hell, like, you know. But, like, luckily, over time, like, through the things that I've experienced in my life and the work that I've done, like, I've been able to know
the same is true for my emotions and my feelings and my situations and my circumstances as it is for, you know, the broken bone. Like, it's gonna suck for a while, but like, I'll get through it, you know? And I think that sort of speaks to what's happening now. Like, you know, like, is the reality that all business owners are gonna be able to get back on their feet after this? Like, I like to think so, but the reality is probably not. And is the reality that like, everybody's gonna go back to the jobs that they had before? Like, you know, all the people that have lost their jobs, like, the truth is that's probably not reality. That's probably just not how it will really be. But like, that's not to say that, you know, like, through that trauma, through that circumstance, that the same thing doesn't apply. Like, we will get better. Like, we keep moving forward. We have to get back up and you know, just keep pushing on. And so, I mean, it's a great topic, very relevant to what's happening right now, and a good reminder for me that things will always change. Like, no matter how dark it seems or how bad it may get, like, things will always get better.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, Cameron, you made me think of something when you talked about how things are going to suck for a minute. You know, you know, when you go through these experiences, like, you have a rush of emotions. A lot of times, some of the emotions you've never felt before. It kind of took me back to my first time in treatment. And, you know, I thought just as soon as I stopped drinking, everything was going to be great. But it was like, oh my God, like, it was hard, you know, and I had to sit in that. I had to sit in my emotions and I had to feel, and I had to start dealing with things. And it is hard, but man, it's worth it, you know? And I just keep going back to, how grateful I am for all the good things that have come from this quarantine for us. You know, I mean, we talked about it earlier, you know, just a minute ago, about every one of us has experienced something good from this. And we really, like, it doesn't matter where you are in life, what's going on around you, you still have something to be grateful for. You got up healthy, you got up alive, you know, like, we always have something to be grateful for. And for me, part of my resilience is that gratitude state. Like, if I'm not in that gratitude state, I start moving backwards, you know? Like, it's so important for me to stay in a gratitude mindset. And all, you know, just having food on the table and water to drink, you know? Like, it's just, we always have something to be grateful for, no matter where we're at in life. But what are some of the ways, like, what are some of the tools that or ways you guys, you know, or I don't know how to phrase that
I would be curious, like, of, you know, maybe different examples, you know, of, you know, moments where we've had to be resilient recently.
Yeah.
Maybe Willie has something.
Maybe Willie's got something.
I got some stuff. So, you know, as you guys were talking, what kept coming up is, you know, that self-trust. You know, one of the things, you going back to the cut analogy, you know, we just trust our bodies to heal the cut, right? And it's funny, I'm a why guy. You guys know this, right? Like, that's why I want to know why things are or how things work, and if I don't, then I don't just table it as something that I'm never going to understand. I table it as something that I need to look deeper into. But you know, I realized a long time ago that I didn't trust myself, that I didn't trust that I could take care of myself in a manner that would produce a positive result, right? Like, and it came from my programming. And the reason that I know that, and a lot of people, you know, my mom definitely doesn't agree with this, but a lot of people may not agree with this, but from the moment of conception, we trust ourselves to completely build the body and organs inside the womb, right? We don't have a outside source telling us how to grow our internal organs as fetuses, right? You know, like we grow naturally as part of the life process. And we do that the entire time that we're in the womb. We don't have any outside source saying, well, it's time, you better grow your eyeballs or else you're gonna be late. It's time for you to start growing your fingernails. I hope that you do it right, you know. And as soon as I was born, as soon as we're born, we start getting put into a position of doubt, right? And throughout all of our lives, we're told, you know, don't step in that puddle, it might be too deep. Don't jump on the trampoline that way. Don't put that in your mouth. Don't explore this area or that area. And I fell victim to that for a long time, that because the outside world and the people that with the best intentions raised me didn't trust themselves completely, that pattern was passed on through generation, right? And so I got a great deal of self-doubt, right? Like I didn't know that I could trust myself in so many areas of my life. And last December, when I stopped working for the previous company I was working for, the result that came out of that was a great demonstration of resilience in myself, because I had already been trusting myself to feed my family nutritiously, right? Like when I got on this health, this healthy lifestyle bandwagon, I started looking into what is nutrition, you know, why is it important that I eat certain foods a certain way and stay away from certain things. And as we became a family and started feeding our kids that way, like I knew that I could trust myself to take care of my children that way. I knew that I could trust myself to feed myself healthy and trust myself to maintain positive relationships. And so it was weird when it came to finances that all too often, you know, we don't trust ourselves to produce an income for ourselves or for our family. And the idea had been coming up in me for a long time that I needed to take the leap and trust myself financially as I did every other area of my life. And when the opportunity came, it was a perfect demonstration that not only can equality come out of negative situations, but so can abundance, right? And so if we trust ourselves enough to heal our own cuts, we can trust ourselves enough to heal our emotional wounds as well. Now, the difference is with the emotional type wounds, it takes a little bit more mental work, because there's so much that goes into the subconscious that keeps us down, right? Like there's so much in the back burner that we really need to bring it all up and bring it all out. And so that's where outside sources come from. How, you know, like the TED talk you were talking about, right? Like the free information that's out there about how the brain works and how chemicals in our bodies react with certain memories and things like that. The more that I understand those things, the easier it is for me to dig inside and bring the negative emotional wounds up so that I can heal them in the light. And that's what seems to help heal these wounds, is light. When I bring the darkness into the light, that's where the healing begins. And I can share that with you guys openly and say, I couldn't love myself for a long time because I didn't trust myself. I didn't trust myself because I was programmed not to trust myself. And I did a lot of things in my past that proved that I couldn't trust myself. And once I started doing the work and I started being able to trust myself to get up on time, to go to work, to produce an income, to eat healthy, the more actions I took in a positive direction, the more I understood what it meant to get up from a dark place and become resilient when bad things happen, because I have a direction on where I want to go. And if I know that direction, then I can go that way. Don't get me started, because wow. I'll start going off, man. I'm all about this shit.
Wow.
I will fucking go off on it. So.
No, Willie, that was great. Holy shit, I think we could just end the show right there.
Yeah.
You know? Guys. Like, all right.
a direction, though.
No, just real quick, there were a couple things that just popped up in that stood out to me with what you said, Willie, and that was bringing the darkness into light. And, like, that's really, like, you're right. For it's the same way with me, too. Like, if I don't talk about what I'm dealing with, if I don't talk about my emotions, and no matter if I've done, if it's something I've done wrong or intentionally or unintentionally, like if I can talk about them to someone I trust, and that's why I'm big on mentors, you know, like, you know,
well, it's a bullshit tell you guys, lie.
It is. Right? It is. Like I was kind of, lie. Yeah. I mean, I was kind of raised not to talk about my feelings. You know, I was kind of programmed not to talk my whole life. You know, you don't talk about your feelings, you know, you just do what you're told. And you know, the doubt, when you're, I always felt like, and I've said this before in previous episodes, like I always felt like there was something wrong for me for feeling a certain way or thinking a certain way. And then when I started talking to you, my sponsor, and to other friends in the program, you guys, I was open about my feelings, realized I wasn't alone, you know, like you guys had gone through the same thing, if not similar things. And I could relate to it. You could relate to me, and you kind of helped walk me through it, you know, like how awesome is that, you know? And Jordan, did you have something to say? I saw you raise your hand earlier.
Oh, I was just ending the episode because Willie knocked it out.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah. I'm probably, yeah,
this
so.
That's everything that Cameron told me yesterday on the phone.
Yeah.
Willie
actually gets every bit of wisdom that he has, like, from me.
From the conversation I have with Cameron before.
Yeah. I am the most important part of the show.
I want to make sure everybody, I mean, it's different with this Zoom meeting. You know, we're doing this via Zoom, and it's different. I want to make sure we all have a chance to get what we want out. But
even doing the podcast this way, Zoom meeting, that's a perfect example of resilience. You know, we were met with the option of
Good point.
Do we stand down and stop putting out content, or do we be a bit resilient and change the mold and keep doing what we're doing? Here we are.
And look at everything that's come out of being able to do these Zoom meetings. You know, like I've learned a lot about connection.
Yeah.
Which is something I wanted. You know, that's right. I have a tattoo completely dedicated to connecting with people. You know, it's a sigil tattoo that I created with the manifestation, the hope of manifesting connection. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's been funny to see the people that we've been able to connect with. Like, we've had to create meetings and all sorts of things. We've had to learn computer skills. You know, we've all had skills. To do things. But Willie, one thing that you said, like when you were talking just then, that I think is important to remember for myself, is that, you know, it's important to have a direction, right? So I can be resilient. I can pick up and move forward. But what am I moving forward to? Like, I'm more apt to get up and, you know, after getting my ass kicked and move forward if I have that clear and solid direction. You know, so that's where a lot of the vision for you comes in, the vision for me, you know, reminding myself on a daily basis of the kind of person that I want to be. And having that clear and concise direction, and you know, like I too, like you had said, you know, had challenges with my career and just very questionable instances where, you know, man, did I do the right thing? Because I quit something really, really stable to you know, move forward in a career that you know, seemed like a pipe dream. And you know, so it's had like these moments of extreme self-doubt and not sure like what direction I'm exactly going in, and you know, like maybe I should have never quit that job, maybe I should just go get a regular 9-to-5
Nate could probably relate with that one.
Yeah,
I can relate to
exactly.
that.
Like,
oh yeah.
And Nate and I have had many conversations about exactly this, because it's a struggle. But like the important part, you know, in those instances where, you know, the work's not coming and I'm not working regularly and, you know, like the jobs just aren't there. Like, what do I do? Like, do I give up and like go back to the 9 to 5? Like, for me, that feels like a defeat, right? And so never in those instances have I been like, man, like I'm just going to go back, you know, to a job I hate, because that isn't being resilient. That's giving up. And so I continue to move forward, you know, and I've recently gotten some pretty exciting news in that category.
Yeah,
right on. You know, like, and really like the vision that I tell myself on a daily basis, like, you know, a lot of the stuff that I have in there as far as like what I want my future to look like is, you know, is, like, will be manifesting itself with this new opportunity. Yeah. So,
and it's important to remember too, like none of this stuff is luck. It's all work, you know,
right.
You don't just wake up after a trauma or after a lifetime of self-defeating behavior and all of a sudden know how to treat yourself, right? It comes from a desire to change something. For me, the true desire came after I'd been sober for a little while. You know, I've shared about this before. You know, I'd been sober for a while. I'd worked some steps in a 12-step program with a sponsor. Avery was out of town, and I did some spiritual work with myself. And I stood in front of a mirror naked, and I thought at that point I'd be able to look myself in the eye and say, you know what, Willie, I love you. And I looked myself in the eye standing in front of this mirror naked, and I went to say it, and I said, Willie, I fucking hate you. And I just started crying, because the realization of self-defeating behavior was so apparent that something had to change, right? But the resilience came in the first day that I went to the gym. I was there for 15 minutes. And the second day I went to the gym, I didn't go. And the third day, I didn't go. And the fourth day, the voice was really loud. You're a piece of shit. You'll never get fucking fit. And I went to the gym and I went for 15 minutes. And the next day, I said, okay, you can do 15 minutes. And I went and I did 15 minutes. And it went from 15 minutes to 30 minutes to 45 minutes to a 5K to a half marathon to a full marathon to a Spartan. You know, I just posted some pictures yesterday of the last medal that I got for the winter circuit, you know. But it started with that realization that I'm not supposed to be like this, right? I'm doing everything that they told me would make me better. I quit drinking. I did the steps. I, you know, talk honestly and openly, and I'm not happy. And so I had to dig deeper. And I had to learn to trust myself, because if the computer shut down, we wouldn't be having this meeting.
Right.
Right. Yep. One of the things that atheism has done for me has put me on a level playing field with all living beings on this planet, understanding that they're going to die and I'm going to die. And that what I do between now and that time matters. Because there's nothing after this. And I know enough about myself that I don't like being miserable. I feel like it's a waste of time. And I know that joy comes with work, right? And I have to work to be happy. I have to work to be free. You know, none of this shit is given to me. It's all earned. Right? Like Chris said in that last episode, like that she was on, you know, she said you have to earn your position every day.
I love that.
Know? And I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved hearing that. You know, I have to look. Yeah. I have to earn my position as a father. I have to earn my position as a podcast co-host. I have to earn my position as the owner of a successful construction company, you know, and that comes with resilience, getting up every day on time. Which, by the way, Nate, good job, hey, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Oh, first couple days are rough. Great. Thank you. Yeah, those first couple days are rough, man.
Nate, why don't you talk a little bit about that? That's had some...
Yeah, so, you know, I was having a hard time getting up on time, you know, and I watched a video on someone's Instagram. It was Steve Harvey, and he talked about winning your morning. You know, if you win your morning, you win your day. And so I love the morning. I love that solitude. And so I made a goal to start getting up at 6 a.m. every day to start, you know, and I was going to document my journey and post it on Instagram. And that's what I've been doing. And I'll tell you what, the response I've been getting from people has been amazing. And the encouragement, it's been amazing. And like, I'm actually excited to get up in the morning right now. Like I have, you know, it's like weird to say, but it's like so cool to, you know, like I want to make sure my bed's made. So when I do my video, like everything looks good, you know, and, but I'm noticing that I'm getting up in a better mood and I'm getting,
you look better. You sound
I do.
Better.
Yeah. Yeah. Like yeah. I feel so much better. And you know, we've been talking about this on the last couple episodes about routine and planning out our day and that.
Discipline.
And I've been sticking, discipline. And I've been really focusing on those areas of my life. And I've been planning everything out. I write a to-do list every night. I wake up, I go over it. Then I write it out, like, you know, time-wise, how I'm going to do my day. And yeah, I mean, things come up and I have to be flexible. But, mm-hmm. you know, like, the things I've been able to accomplish just this week alone have been amazing. And I've been able to find a lot of free time for painting and other, you know, personal hobbies.
Tell me how not getting up made you feel like
shit.
Why was it that you wanted to get up on time?
You know, I'm going to tell you why it was such a, how I felt. I'm going to tell you why I felt like shit is because, and I really need to be completely vulnerable here. And that is, I felt like a fraud. You know, I get on this podcast and I talk about bettering myself and doing hard things and having my life together. And here I am, I'm sleeping in till 7:30, 8:30, sometimes 9:30. Yeah, a lot. And I really did. I felt like a fraud. I felt like a fraud. Like, you know, and I mean, it was just, I'd wake up in the morning and I'd think, I knew what I needed to do. There had to be a change made, and it was that desire to do better, you know? Like, I think part of resilience is a growth mindset. I like to think of it as a growth mindset. Like if I'm not living what I preach, I'm nothing. And I'm going backwards. And that's kind of how I felt too. Like I was degressing, not progressing. And I could tell that my mood was, I could see it in myself. You know, my mood was starting to change. My concentration was not on point, you know. I wasn't getting anything done because by the time, you know, I was up and ready to go, I had the energy to do things, my day was halfway over, you know, and I wanted to be the person that I present to the world with this podcast. I want to be that man. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want somebody to do an article. I don't want to like see on the internet, like Nate Casperson, co-host of The Other Side of Hell, is a liar, gets up at 12 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, like I want people to say, no, like he lives what he says he does. He does what he says and he really pushes himself. And so that was the desire to start this little journey and you know, I need it. Willie and I talked about this one day that, you know, maybe, you know, posting it, you know, documenting it and posting it on Instagram would be the accountability that I needed. And I actually have people messaging me saying, I watch your video every, you're one of the first videos I watch every day. And it's like inspiring, you know, that like people are watching me. So I better be on my game. You know, I better be doing what I say I'm doing. And so that's where it came from.
But Nate, that first day.
Oh my God.
Was not easy, right?
Well, it wasn't easy. You could see it in the videos too. Like I'm all groggy. I think the first 2 days, like I'm like, you know, but.
Well, and I talked to you later that day and you seemed like you were kind of upset. Like you were like, I feel so off. Like I'm not really doing anything. Like, yeah, I got up early, but so what? Like,
yeah, I was pissed. I got up on time. I'm like, and I posted it on Instagram. I told everybody what I was doing and now I got to do it. Mm-hmm. So, but
oops.
Yeah. Right. Jordan. Right. But it's been great. And you know, it's been a good move forward for me, you know, and I'm documenting it for 30 days because, I heard this in treatment when I was in rehab, that 30 days starts a habit, like that kind of tattoos it in your brain, gets the momentum going. And so I'm going to document it for 30 days. So it's been good. It's been a good thing for me. So yeah.
Cool.
But yeah.
Good work. Sweet. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it, guys. And I appreciate the support I've gotten from you guys. And, I'm so grateful that I have a group of friends that don't say to me, It's quarantine. Don't worry about it. I'm grateful that I got a group of friends that say, get your ass up. Get up. Do it.
Yeah, I don't need cheerleaders.
Man. Yeah, I don't.
I need people to, you know, get real with me. Yeah,
right.
Coaches.
Right. Yeah. 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 I mean, yeah. So, but yeah.
Cool.
That's
great. I like that you're growing and you're finding this opportunity to. It's funny how alcoholics and drug addicts, like I remember the first time that I bought a vacuum. I think I was like 25, and I went and I shared about it. I spent like $27 on a vacuum. Pat myself on the back. You know, there was this guy that used to share a lot. He's dead now. His name was Steve. He'd share a lot, and I got so much out of his message in early sobriety.
Holy yeah, shit,
Batman.
He would tell
a story. He worked at this. I don't know if it was a refinery or a factory or something, but they had a cafeteria. And when he got 5 years of sobriety, he went into the cafeteria and stood on the table and told everybody, "I haven't had a drink in 5 years." And he's patting himself on the back, and this old guy next to him goes, "I never had a drink in my life. What the fuck are you so excited about?" You know, we get all this self-gratification for doing normal shit that other people have done their whole lives.
Yeah. But
the truth of the matter is this shit's hard for us, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. It is.
I didn't mean to become an alcoholic and a drug addict. You know, I didn't mean to piss away all my ambition and drive through drugs and alcohol. That shit used to make me really happy. I used to have a really good time, and I found an identity in using and drinking, and I found a community in drugs and alcohol and going to the bar and selling drugs and all that stuff. You know, I found a community and all that, and the negative effects that came out of it weren't intentional, right? Like going to jail, right? Like, I would be in jail if that cop would have just left me alone. Which, I mean, there's a little bit of truth to that, right? I mean, that's probably true, but also what is true is that drugs are illegal in our country. And you put yourself
in that situation because of drugs and alcohol.
Some truth to that, you know? The one thing that I can't control is what causes trauma in my life, right? All I can control is how I deal with it. And, you know, I know that for Nate, going to jail was a traumatic experience for him.
It was.
I mean, to the point where he's like on the straight fucking path as far as his obligations go to the court. Like, he is not stepping outside of that. You know, jail wasn't that traumatizing to me, obviously, because I went back a bunch of times.
I shouldn't laugh at that. But I shouldn't laugh at that. I know.
Willie would laugh at that.
But what was traumatizing to me is standing in front of a mirror naked and not being able to tell myself that I love you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was bad for me. Mm-hmm. And I had to put myself in a position to where I could honestly look at myself, and it all came through action. Willie, I love you. Thank you for doing the work to create a person that you admire. You know, we've been watching those Wes Watson Fit videos with that steroided. I shouldn't say steroided. That's not even true at all. He looks steroided out, but I don't think he is. But he is a fucking madman, this guy, Wes Watson. He does GP penitentiary on YouTube, but he's a motivational and a coach, and he's like fucking yelling. Ah, ah. But you know, he said, create the man that you admire in yourself so that you can give him away. You know?
Hmm. Interesting.
And by action, you know, he also said, you know, he's sitting there and he's, I mean, this dude is ripped, like fucking out of control.
Fit
as fuck. And he's like, he's this almost isn't gifted?
Like ripped as me.
Yeah.
Pretty close. Like,
now that I'm going to laugh at.
He goes, this isn't gifted. This is earned.
Right.
You earn this. You know? When am I going to get the six pack abs? When you earn it. When am I going to be happy with myself? When you earn it. You know? And there's a lot of truth to that. Right, and
yeah, he talks a lot. I earned this, you guys.
Right, and he talks a lot about being okay with where you're at. Right, like you're not going to be good at self evaluation. You're not. Like if you've never evaluated yourself, you're not going to be good at it. But after 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 years of really doing inventory on yourself and your behavior, you're going to be pretty good at being able to be honest with the self evaluation. So, yeah,
like, good point.
Like, do the work.
Yeah, what a good reminder to like keep doing the work too.
Yeah,
like, it will get better. Like, you'll get better at it. And one thing that I've sort of gravitated a little bit towards lately is Tom Bilyeu and his mindset course. He talks about his you know, there's like 25 core beliefs, and one of them is like, your efforts will be rewarded. Like, no matter
whatever
what
they are.
Yeah, like whatever they are, your efforts will be rewarded. So like, it's important for me to remember, like, you know what? Like, things will get better. And the other thing is like, hey, average is good enough. It's a good starting point, right? And as long as I continue to do the work, like, and I have like a growth mindset, then I know that as long as I'm growing, that's progress. That's progress being made.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, right. No, yeah. Cameron, I do want to say I think you look great. I know, you know, you've the hair.
Go back go back and watch episode 7.
Like, all right.
Yeah.
Cameron was a puffy.
I watched episode 1. I watched some of episode 1 the other day, and there's quite a transformation in Cameron.
Maybe it's a good idea for me to do, but I'll tell you this.
I think you should.
Like, You guys, I watched, here's the thing, it comes back to the same thing, and we've talked about this before, because like I through this whole quarantine thing, I was reintroduced to the app Marco Polo. And I haven't used Marco Polo on my phone for 2 years. So I still had videos on my phone from 2 years ago. And 2 years ago, guys, I was looking pretty, I was looking pretty good. So I went into Marco Polo to like...
But obviously not feeling that great.
I mean, I mean, I guess not.
There's some spiritual work that needed to be done.
There was definitely, some work that needed to be done. For sure, for sure. And I feel like, you know, like that's something that's come out of this is like I've had to put in the work. I've had to, you know, I've had to be open. I've had to be honest. And for me, that's definitely something that I've had to be, you know, that has tested my resilience and my resolve. Like, what am I going to do? Like, just not, like, just accept it. And maybe that's something else we can discuss, too, is like, Where's the balance between sort of accepting, you know, where you're at and being resilient enough to pick yourself up and get going, you know? And Willie,
I know the answer.
Like he has something on that.
I know the answer to that. It's in the honest amount of effort that you're putting into whatever it is you're trying to craft, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're putting in an honest effort on your particular weight loss journey and you're doing absolutely 100% on that, right? That's when the acceptance of, okay, I'm at where I'm at, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're giving a half-assed effort and you're not getting any results and you're trying to convince yourself to accept where you're at, it will never happen, right? Because inside you know that you're not fucking giving 100%.
Good point.
But when you're giving it your all, like when, you know, going back to Nate getting up in the morning, like him getting up and making his bed and then attacking his day, whether he's tired all day or not, that's still 100% on that particular thing, right? And then you accept, like, okay, I'm tired, like, all right, I'll go to bed early and still get up at the same time, right? Like, if you've spent 8 hours editing a podcast, one of the shows, and the audio just will not go right, like, you know, that's 100%, and like, it's got to go out. Like, okay, this isn't the best audio clip or whatever, but it's got to go out, and I have to accept that that's what it is because I've been here for 8 fucking hours, and it's time to put this thing out, you know. If I'm resilient on my diet after caving on whatever it is, and I call you up and I'm like, "Fuck, dude, here, where had been my great resolve? I've lost all willpower." And you're like, "No, you're stuck right now. There's something you're missing. How about you start right now, 100%. Stop putting that shit in your body and continue the rest of this 24 hour. Wake up tomorrow morning and make another commitment first thing in the morning and give it 100%. At the end of that day, if I hadn't lost 10 pounds, but I didn't eat anything that causes negativity in my life, then I'm able to accept that as a win, right? But if I'm like, oh, well, I'll only eat one donut at noon, right? Then that's not okay. So I think it boils down to effort, right? Effort is what determines true acceptance on where you're at or having to push harder.
Right.
Good so point. Something to add to that too. I think it has a lot to do with how honest I'm willing to be with myself. You know, like it wasn't easy for me to be honest with the fact that I was sleeping in when you guys were getting up early and working out and I was a little ashamed to admit that to you guys, you know, and to the world, you know, but it for me, it's about being honest with myself, you know, like how honest am I willing to be with myself, you know, like, you know, and then comes the acceptance, you know, then the acceptance can start, you know, right. for me. So, Jordan, I don't feel like we're utilizing you.
We're utilizing you?
Yeah,
you
yeah.
You know me. I'm a listener. I like to sit. I
yeah,
like to
you are. You are. You, know, you are.
I spent a lot of time being, you know, the guy that had to have his opinion out there, the guy that had to be saying something all the damn time. And I'm finding in maybe maturity and self-work that I don't need to be that guy. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do have. I have
not
to say this.
Me out.
We love.
I have
you.
To. I have to say this about you, Jordan. You are kind of quiet, but when you do chime in, it's like, wow, that was very profound. You know, so
yeah, you get that
you do.
From listening, man. I didn't just come
yeah.
up with that on my own terms. I listened to someone somewhere.
Good point.
Yeah, yeah.
His wisdom was earned.
But,
well, I don't know, Nate. Like, did I feel like that's a good segue into Rena's story.
Yes. Oh, we got a great war story. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what she talked a lot. I mean, her whole journey, one of the things that I really liked about it was that she talked like she had this overwhelming notion to just keep going no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I mean, that ties right into what we're talking about today. Like, maybe you can tell a little bit about who she is and what her story is going to be, or what your thoughts are on it.
Yeah, so I loved her story. I loved her story, and man, I'm really excited that we have it for this episode. Willie's the one who actually met her. I'm not. I guess was it through Instagram, Willie?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of hers on it. Like, and I had to be honest with her when I got her on Zoom. I told her I'm fangirling a little bit. I'm kind of like fangirling because I got you here. And she laughed, and but I get just so much out of her Instagram and off of her YouTube channel. She has a lot of videos that she's an emotional eating coach, and the reason that she is an emotional eating coach is because like she was a big girl even in high school. You know, she talks about a specific mm-hmm. weight that she was in high school, and it's pretty substantial for a mm-hmm. teenage girl to be that heavy.
Yeah.
And I really relate with her because she talks a lot about the core reason why people binge eat, not just eat a lot, but binge eat, and what binge eating is and emotional eating is, and the root behind, you know, what we're trying to feel through stuffing food. And, you know, I just, you know, I relate with it, and I get a ton out of all her videos. And so I'd been trying to get with her for a little while. And again, you know, because of this Zoom thing, mm-hmm. because of this quarantine thing, it worked out. And we had a really good conversation before and after her story. And I felt really lucky to be able to get it. And I feel like I have another resource because, you know, she's just an amazing victory over emotional harm, you know, self-harm through emotional stuffing, whatever it is, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, right, right. Yes, and it's a great story. I love your story. And I'm, yeah. What better? Let's roll into it then. Without further ado, here's Rena's story.
Hey, my name's Rena. I'm here to spread the love. And today I'm here with Will, and we're just talking about my story and how I got to where I am now. So now I'll just give you a little bit of backstory about not backstory, but tell you where I am now. So I'm an emotional eating coach. I work one-on-one with clients who are dealing with compulsive overeating, binge eating, emotional eating, all things dysfunctional relationships with food. It has been a very long journey to get where I am today, doing what I love. So a backstory on me. So when I was about 10 or 11, I started using food to numb my feelings. And I did that because I wasn't listening to my gut. I grew up in a very religious community. There was like a church literally on every corner of this little town. And I had a secret, and I knew from a very young age, like 10, 9, maybe 9 even, I get the numbers mixed up, but that I was attracted to women. And this was totally a weird thing for me to be feeling. And I knew that it was very taboo. It was something, I didn't know any gay people. I they used to say in church sometimes when I would go to youth group, like, it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. And I don't know, that wasn't directed towards me, but I just knew that that was the general consensus. And so, right when I started feeling these feelings and having the secret, it was immediately, I was like, I will never talk about this ever. And it'll probably go away. Yeah, it'll get, I'm gonna marry a man. I'm gonna, do all the things I'm supposed to do and all that. And so, but I was ignoring my gut, you know, and these feelings didn't stop. They only increased. And I felt so much shame, so much shame. I really thought that I was like inherently bad. Like, I was like, what? You know, there what's wrong with me? There's an issue here. And like I said, I didn't know anybody who was gay. I didn't even know what gay was, honestly. So I ignored my inner feelings by just eating and eating. And that carried on for a long time, probably until I was like I said earlier, 11. I remember I couldn't wait until Wednesday afternoons because my friends and I would go to this restaurant and I could still taste like the corn dogs and the fries and all the ranch and all the high calorie palatable foods. And I started disconnecting from my friends and people in my life and connecting more on the food because that was my only solace. That was my only way to have peace of mind, you know, a way to just calm these voices that are like, you're not good enough. You're inherently bad. People hate you. Like, I literally was having these thoughts and I hadn't told a soul yet about this. So that was what was going on in my mind. And so I used food that was my drug of choice. That was the most easily accessible thing. That's a lot of reasons why it starts at such an early age. Like, you know, you were talking about, it's because it's so easily accessible. You know, we don't have alcohol around. I mean, there might be some in the fridge for our parents, but you know, food is just everywhere. So when I was a freshman in high school, I was like 225 pounds. So that is when I went on my first crazy diet. Yeah, it was the summer before my sophomore year of high school. And I was just like, something's got to change, man. And one thing about me is when I make up my mind, I just make it up for the most part. It's like a done deal. So I was like, I'm gonna lose weight. And I'm going to get attention from people. Cause that's another thing that I deeply craved. You know, I just wanted attention and I really wanted to be seen, but there was no way to actually be seen. Right. Cause I couldn't talk about that stuff. So I thought maybe if people see me for losing weight and stuff, then I'll get that need met. So I went on a crazy diet. I invented it myself. I love talking about this. It's funny now. Two small bowls. My mom had these real small glass bowls. I'm talking like less than a cup you could fit in there of cereal. I would eat two small bowls of Honey Bunches of Oats for breakfast and for lunch. And then for dinner, I had a lean pocket. And I literally did that the whole summer. And I walked my dog and every day. And so I ended up losing a lot of weight on that, but of course I gained it all back. There's a very unhealthy way to lose weight. So that started my whole, that really started the binging. Cause before it was just overeating, over consuming a lot of snick snacking, you know, but, that's when the binging started and it only got worse later on. I went out to join the military when I was 20 years old. Because I had no idea what I was doing with my life. I was stuck in this food and dieting addiction. Because if I wasn't stuffing my face with food, I was obsessed with the diet I was on, counting calories and fantasizing about how happiness was at the end of my weight loss. And so, yeah, I was like, I just need to get out of this small town. At that time, I still didn't tell anybody about my sexuality and the feelings I was having. I was still suppressing it. And so, yeah, I joined the military. That made things better and worse, because I actually came out when I joined the military, because there was some people there who came from like Oregon and some really like diverse places who were really accepting. They didn't think anything different if you were gay. Then they asked me, you know, like, hey, when I was in boot camp, they're like, Bissett, that's my last name, Bissett, you gay? I'm like, no. Like, of course I turned beet red. The shame just owned me at that moment. But there was a little voice inside me that said, like, you can trust these people, you know, you can trust them. So I let it out. I was like, maybe, I think I'm bi. Like, you know, that helped buffer a little bit. But they embraced me, man, and they loved me, and they showed me what the safety that I guess I never really felt. You know, I felt seen, and so that helped a little bit. But you know, the eating still continued. I was binging, dieting, still feeling really disconnected from people. I had no sense of what emotional regulation meant. You know, I was feeling sad, anxious, like all the feelings that you think a person would feel when they leave home for the first time, join the military, go to boot camp, all these things, all the things that you would think somebody would feel, like, you know, maybe a little bit of fear, excitement. I don't remember feeling any of that stuff, because I was just in such a bad place, man. I was just continuously numbing it with food. I developed I think I was like low-key alcoholic for a while. I definitely developed a dependency on alcohol. It was all the things, smoking cigarettes. If I wasn't in the military, I would have been doing drugs. I'm sure of it, like hard drugs, but you know, I didn't want to get kicked out. It's been a blur, really. When I got out of the military, I was in for 6 years. So I got out in 2018. Yeah. That was when things got real low. So I came home back to Texas and I tried to integrate back into society. And I thought it was going to be real easy, and it so wasn't. You know, I didn't really notice, but in the military, I did have a sense of like certainty, right? Which is one of the basic human needs. I just set my alarm, show up at 7:30 every morning. You know, it was just so I could count on my job. And when I got out, I was like, I'm gonna be a personal trainer. You know, of course, like what else would I do? Cause I'm obsessed with weight loss, dieting. Let me be a personal trainer. So I got a job at Gold's Gym, and mind you, I hadn't dealt with any of this trauma that I felt, all this shame. The shame was just so there. And I was always defensive, man. Like, the slightest thing could trigger me, and I would just have all these thoughts, these negative thoughts about still the same thoughts. Yeah, I came out and everything, but I still had all that shame. So yeah, I got a job at Gold's Gym. I worked there for like 3 weeks. And, you know, it was a brand new environment, nothing like the military. I felt underqualified. I was still dealing with overeating. And I had an anxiety attack. And this was like my first real panic attack, I think. And let me know how I am on time, too. So my first real panic attack, I guess, happened. I don't even remember. Oh yeah. They wanted me to teach these classes, these workout classes. And I'm like, dude, I just started like doing this, but like, I'm always trying to be this superhero or something. Right. So I'm like, I got this for sure. Sign me up. I didn't set boundaries. I didn't say, I don't think I'm ready for that. I just put me in coach. I got this. I did not have that at all. Like, not at all. Cause I just started to get all these negative thoughts going. You're not good enough for this. These people who are working out are better than you. Like, you can't do a handstand. you can't even do a double jump rope and all this. Like, the thoughts were unreal, and the panic just surfaced, and I thought I was going to pass out. And so I just went to the supervisor and I said, hey, I got to go. She's like, what? Are you okay? Like, what's wrong with you? I was like, I got to go. Like, I can't do this. And she thought I was on something, but it was really just the anxiety. So that, I think, was the point. Oh no. After that, then I decided, let me start my own personal training business. Like, it was just a gym, you know, I need to be on my own. That was my thought. So I started my own business that came with a whole lot of its own stressors. So I kept having these like minor panic attacks, anxiety attacks, man, and like just overwhelming, you know? And so then I was like, I got to do something, because the thoughts were getting bad too. Like, you know, I started having just a lot of self-doubt. I can't do anything. And I was still depending on the food, of course, at the time. So still didn't have the emotional regulation skills. Still didn't really believe that taking deep breaths, slow exhales would help. Still was like, oh, that's for the woo-woos, man. That's not for me. Like, I'm not about that life. I'm going to figure this out on my own. But it came to a point where I was like, this is it, man. Like, I was considering taking my life. I didn't have any like set plan. I just think it's always kind of been, you know, throughout all of my pain and all the suffering, which I didn't really get into a whole lot, but it was bad. There's been a lot of moments where I've been sitting on the floor or collapsed in the shower, just laying down in the fetal position. Like, dude, what are we gonna do? Throughout all those moments where I felt just full of shame, like there was just nothing good gonna come out of this, there was also another part of me, and there still is. I still have bad days, right? Not like anything like that, but that voice that says, there's some light, dude. Just keep going, no matter what, just keep going. So I never had a plan, but the voices were so bad. And so I did consider, you know, possibly taking my life. And I knew, like, okay, I got to find a way out of this. If I'm actually going to commit to keep going, let's at least find an effective strategy here to really move through this, because this is not working. So I went to a psychiatrist. Well, first I went to a psychologist. She referred me to a psychiatrist. Of course, I shouldn't say of course, not all doctors are like this. I want to be very clear. She hardly listened to me for about 30 minutes before she recommended I go see a psychiatrist and get on some medication. And so I was taking some anti-anxiety / anti-depression medication. And the worst thing about that was the first week of being on those, it was like more anxiety than I ever experienced in my life. And I can tell you, I was only on those for about a month. And the first few days were just like so much panic. I actually ended up getting a job at Chipotle because I just needed some work, man, you know? And I called in. I was like, my first day, I had my mom call in for me. It was so bad. I was like, mom, I can't go to work. I'm having the worst panic attack ever. So I was only on that medication for about a month until I was like, this isn't it. And medication, I want to be like super careful. It helps some people. I'm not against it. For me though, I knew in my gut that this wasn't it, man. Like, I was feeling kind of foggy. Who knows, maybe that would have gone away, but I always just wanted to find my own way out of this, and I knew it was possible. And so that's when I think that was the lowest point. You know, I was working at Chipotle because they didn't fire me, luckily, after calling in for the first day. But that was a turning point. I was like, okay, the medication's not going to work. It just doesn't seem right for me. I'm considering, like, what would happen if I just didn't wake up tomorrow. What are we doing here? And so I started digging deep, started getting on YouTube, started utilizing free resources because there's so many resources out there. I started meditating. I could go on and on and on about the benefits of meditation and the impact that meditation has had on my life. Just being able to observe my thoughts rather than taking them on as truth and as my identity, right? Because that's what it was. That was, I went to the psychologist and I said, I've got all these thoughts, man. Like, there's just one after another. And she suggested, well, just pick one apart at a time, one a day, and see if it's true. But that wasn't good enough because I had like 30 thoughts coming in from the back door, the side door, the front door, the top. I had all these thoughts. There's no way I could just pick one a day. And that didn't work for me. And I was like, I got to get a grip on these thoughts. And then when I started understanding meditation and just the idea that I could rise above my thoughts and see myself for who I truly was rather than what these thoughts were saying. Because really negative thoughts are a culmination of, you know, our environment that we grow up in and the beliefs of others that we take on, you know? So when I realized like, that's not who I am, these thoughts are not me. And I started implementing like a daily meditation practice, like 20 to 30 minutes a day. Changed my life. It only took like a week or two when I started really seeing differences. So I was like, holy smokes, there is a way out of this. At the same time, I was reading a book called Claim Your Power by Mastin Kipp. Life-changing book for me. In this book, you know, I was pretty hesitant to read it because the title, you know, Claim Your Power. I don't need to claim my power, self-help, you know, but this book was different. And it's not about changing your thoughts, changing your life, because I read all the books that encourage, like, just think better, think more positively. I'm all about positive thinking, but for people who are struggling and have a history of trauma and shame, like deep shame, negative thoughts, sometimes just the little switch is not enough of the positive thinking. So this book helped guide me through where these thoughts came from. What's the root cause of this suffering that I'm feeling? You know, where is this anxiety actually stemming from? And so that book changed my life. And then I read it like 4 or 5 times. And it's written by, I think I said his name earlier, but his name is Mastin Kipp. He is a functional life coach. And I went to one of his live events, and that really changed the game too. All of a sudden, I'm in this room of people standing. I remember I'm at this event, and you got the opportunity to talk on the mic if you got something to say. We're doing this like deep meditation, and all in this big hotel, like conference room, and you know, we're doing this meditation, this guided meditation, and it's to go back to a time when you felt like rejected, or I don't exactly remember how it went, but for whatever reason, the memory that came to mind was when I was in junior high and these girls that were like popular, they looked at me and out of nowhere, we were cool until this moment. And they said, we think you're gay. We don't want to be your friend anymore. So that memory came to mind. And whenever the meditation was over, like, anybody want to share their experience with this meditation? And I'm like, dude, I do not want to share this memory. Like, why would I want to share that and relive that? But I really wanted to heal, so I was willing to do whatever. So I raised my hand, the microphone over to me. So it's me now talking to Mastin Kipp, the author of this like book. And I'm like, yo, this is what's coming up, man. Like, I'm having these girls bully me. I felt rejected. But of course, I'm like shaking as I'm saying it because I got nervous and there's a lot of emotions. But he was like, well, let's do this little exercise kind of. Let's create this new experience for you. He didn't actually say that, but now I understand that's what he was doing. Gave me the microphone. He said, turn to all these people. I think there was like 400 people there. He said, let them know that you're gay. I was like, oh, okay. Because I had also told him a little bit about all the shame that I had from just this idea that I was inherently wrong for being gay. So he's like, just tell him. And I was like, okay. I put the microphone, I was like, hey, I'm Rena, and I'm gay. The whole 400 people just stood up, started cheering for me. And yeah, and the somatic experience of that moment, it didn't erase my past and erase these feelings of rejection, but it created a new resourceful opportunity that I can always reflect back on now. Right. And yeah, so that was one of the experiences too. And I just saw, I felt so much love and so much safety. And that's when I learned how incredibly powerful safety is in the healing journey. But I really just followed my heart and my gut on my journey to, you know, to read the book, to start meditating, to get in touch with my heart center rather than my headspace. You know, I just keep seeking. Because like I said, I just have that voice of hope, even though sometimes it's real quiet, it's there. And it's really easy to not hear that voice, especially when we're in situations that, you know, nobody else around us might have that same attitude. They might be real negative or pessimistic. It's kind of like you feel like you're in a tunnel sometimes when you're not around people who make you feel safe and accepted. And so we just really have to remind ourselves, and it's hard because sometimes we don't have those experiences, but there is always safe people. No matter how dark it gets and how much you feel unlovable and how ashamed you feel. And I still do this today. I'm not putting myself on any type of pedestal or anything. Like, I do this today because, I'll say it again. Shame is a bitch, man. I don't know if I'm supposed to curse on here, but shame is I don't know if you're into Brene Brown, but she talks a lot about shame, and just it's the lowest, if that's the lowest vibration you can be at, is stuck in shame, and it'll really make you stuck. So I still do this today, but I have to remember there's a world of people, no matter who does and doesn't like me or accept me or agree with me. There is so many people who freaking love me and who want to see me grow and who are on my team, you know? And so I guess a takeaway for anybody watching this is, like, even in the darkest, darkest of times, man, when you see zero hope, there is always people out there, no matter what you've been through, what you've done, all the habits that you're dealing with, binge eating, overeating, compulsive eating, dependence on alcohol, drugs, anything. There is always going to be someone who's going to be on your team. And yeah, and so that's what I do, you know, with my clients is it's so not about the food. The compulsive eating and the binge eating and all the other addictions you could have, man, it's like, it's really about the trauma and digging that up and creating new resourceful experiences, you know. So yeah, so like I said, I do one-on-one coaching for people struggling with overeating, compulsive eating, but really what it's more about a journey of really just loving yourself, man. But it's a process, just like anything else worthwhile. So you can find me on Instagram at Rena Bissett Coaching. Yep, I think that's about it.
Wow.
See? Great.
Wow. Wow.
She's so awesome.
That was really a killer story. That wow.
I really like her, watching man. Her face. Like, I like just, like, she could talk about anything. I like listening to Rena talk. I think
I have to admit, after I started following her on Instagram, and just her Instagram is inspiring. You know, the stuff she's got on there is inspiring. And so,
yeah.
And I love the courage that comes from her. I mean, she has got some courage, you know. Like, I like how, I've never struggled with my sexuality, and I can't imagine what that would be like. I can't.
Right.
And how hard and difficult that would be. But to be, you know, she's in the military in a safe place where people know who she is, and she still can't be 100% honest with them. You know, she's still feeling that shame and that, like, I can relate to that. You know, I can totally relate to feeling different. Like there's something wrong with me, you know, that isn't wrong with someone else. Like and the honesty, yeah. Not, you know, I totally, totally related to that. So
yeah, man,
awesome story though.
Yeah, it was great. Like I really identified with almost every part of her story. Like she talked about how she was like 9 years old, when she felt like she had secrets. And like from that moment forward, she just had this incredible amount of shame. And just, I kept hearing that word over and over and over in her story. And it's like, I totally identify with that, because when I come back to like so many parts about like my story, like it's hard to say what came first, right? Like the shame or the using. But I knew that there was so much shame in all of my actions and my behaviors that I was completely paralyzed with it. So like that part of her story, and obviously I identify as a compulsive overeater as well. And so I think that a lot of people are going to get something from it. I know I did, and I can't thank her enough. Thank you, Rena.
Yes,
your story.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. I identify so often, you know, and I've talked to another gay friend of mine about when she came out as gay, and when I came out to my family as an atheist, like, believe it or not, it's an awful similar, like,
I believe it,
but it, yep. Like, I was just so afraid to tell my folks that I just don't believe that stuff, and that I'm not a Christian, and I don't see the evidence for God, you know, but it seems like as we come out to the world as who we really are, the healing really begins, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once I was able to identify who I am in that area of my life got better. I brought it out to the world and said, look, this is who I am, and everybody accepted me. And like she talked about at that conference that she went to and was able to stand up in front of, you know, 400 people or however many people were there and say, hey, I'm Rena and I'm gay, and everybody just started cheering and
right
and clapping at her, and
I love that part of her story.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite parts too.
Well, we paralyze ourselves first off by not accepting ourselves, and then while we're not accepting ourselves, you can't help but look at your peers and everybody around you and look for comparisons rather than similarities, because you're looking for a comparison to give validation to yourself, for you to accept yourself. But the minute that you actually accept yourself, you stop looking at all these other people and seeing differences, and you start seeing similarities. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if they don't accept you, because you accept you. And that's where healing begins.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
When great you finally point, trust Jordan. Yourself, right?
Well, yeah.
You finally trust yourself.
You know? Great point, Jordan.
I really liked how she, because I did a lot of the same things, you know. I liked how she went on YouTube and started finding free resources.
Right, yeah.
Because I did that, you know, with all this stuff. I started with the eating, with the exercise, with the spirituality, with the mental mind growth, with the biology, everything that I want to learn, I go on YouTube and I find a specialist in that area. And there is one, and there's somebody that's either done a TED Talk or has a YouTube channel or something dealing with whatever it is that I'm looking up, right? And so
how lucky are we that we live in that day and age?
Sure. I mean, you can look up anything and learn it, but really the best teacher's experience. So you can look up a million YouTube videos how to do something, but you're not going to really learn it till you give it that first attempt. So
until you try. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. For anybody. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say something really stupid.
Oh, well, I'll save you. So for any of you guys out there that want to find Rena, she's on Instagram at Rena Bissett _ coaching. That's one, like, all together, Rena Bissett. And her YouTube channel is just Rena Bissett, R-E-N-A-B-I-S-S-E-T-T on YouTube.
And we'll put that information in the show notes in the description in YouTube as well.
So, and I'm going to testify right here. Like, she is inspiring. She is an inspiring individual. I want to thank her for sharing that with us. And she is loved. The other side of hell loves her. So, yeah.
Right. Because I'm Rena, and I'm here to spread the love.
Right? Yeah. Right? Yeah, that's what I like.
Spread it on like peanut butter and jelly.
Right. You know, well, hey, before we close out, I just want to – we – want to mention that we've got some exciting things coming up this year. Later on in the fall, we've got an upcoming event that we'll be announcing here soon, and we're excited for. We just want to make mention of it. Cameron also has an announcement.
Well, the Everything meeting. So we did our first Everything meeting this last Thursday. Think we're gonna keep doing that. It's just a Zoom meeting. I feel like we'll continue to do something of that nature as long as people respond to it. And I felt like it went pretty well.
I thought it was a great meeting. So
yeah, I think we'll fill it out and just, you know, like we want everybody that participates to get the most from it. So it may change or take different shape or however, you know, as we progress with it. But you know, thank you to everybody that did come out. And again, we'll be doing the same thing this Thursday, 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time.
Great. And we'll post an announcement for that on our Facebook and our Instagram, The Other Side of Hell at 101, The Other Side of Hell 101.
And our Twitter. Instagram.
And our Twitter, yes.
Yeah, we have Twitter now. What's we have Twitter handle, now, Nate?
Our Twitter is different. It's, let's see, T-O-S-O-H. Dude, take it, Cameron.
T-O-S-O-H podcast.
Oh, I can't believe I screwed that up. Right, that's what our Twitter account is, yeah. And we'll post it on Twitter as well. So thank you, Cameron. What's that?
The Other Side of Hell.
Yeah. Toso. Yeah. Toast was taken, and The Other Side of Hell was too long, so we had to abbreviate it. So
I love it. I think it's great.
So, but we'll post that so that everybody knows the meeting ID. There is no password needed for that meeting, so everybody knows that. But I thought this was a great show.
Yeah, you just download Zoom. If you don't have it, it's free. You just log right in, because it's cool, man. We spend so much time allowing, you know, our viewers to get to know so much about us, but this is kind of an opportunity we get to know more about the people we're connecting with, and that's the whole point.
And love it. We got a great response from the meeting. I got a lot of comments on Friday about how people really enjoyed the meeting, and that, you know, it's not limited to just an addiction meeting. It's everything. And people need to talk. Mm-hmm. People need to talk. And what better way?
Yeah. We had somebody in there that said that she suffered from low self-esteem. That's it. That's all. And that's exactly what we're looking for, man. I can identify with that. So, yeah.
Right.
If you have any of these things, we want to hear from you. We want to get to know you better. So come out to The Other Side of Hell podcast. Everything meeting.
Thursday.
All right. I love you guys, man, this was a good show. This was a great episode. I thought I learned I'm taking a lot away from this, and I hope our viewers are too.
Stay resilient,
and our listeners.
Stay resilient, man.
Jordan, go ahead.
I just like to say, you know, with this whole Zoom meetings, how they've been, like, I've really gotten to kind of get my voice in and be part of this on a level that our viewers don't really see. So I've really kind of appreciated that opportunity, and And so, you know, I look forward to get back in the studio, and I definitely appreciated my time being on these episodes with you guys as well. So
we're happy to have you, man. It's been pretty awesome. And Jordan's getting a microphone when we get back into the studio. We don't know what that looks like yet, but he's getting his own microphone.
Right.
It's just something else for me to trip over is all it's going to be at this point in time.
No, Jordan, everything you have to say, Jordan, has a lot of value, and I appreciate everything you say, really. Your input's been much appreciated. And
thanks, man.
So I've had some people comment to me about what you say on the show and how they really resonate with it. So, yeah, but well, guys, another great episode.
Yeah.
Another good one. Another one in the books. All right.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, everybody. And have a great night.
Yeah, you're worth the work.
See you on the other side.
Peace out, everyone.
See you guys.